Would you introduce yourselves, please?
I'm Sharon Fu of the Ravenettes.
I'm Suna Rose Wagner of the Ravenettes.
My favorite thing in the world since things like Sleepwalking by Santo and Johnny, you know, is, and that's an instrumental, mind you, but I am the huge fan of pretty beautiful, entrancing, romantic songs that when you really listen to them, if you're really smart and you write a great pop song, you can accomplish some amazing things. And I was actually in the car on the way here listening to Evil Seeds, and I got scared. I did. For like the first minute of it, before it went into the vocal, I kind of said, this is really creepy. And so I think if there's anything that I really appreciate about this band...
It's for evoking feelings. I mean, that's what the music is for. And that's what we're trying to accomplish, I guess. And... I don't know. It's not like we have a big master plan, but it's just whatever we gravitate towards. And that particular song was actually like specifically very very inspired by Bernard Herrmann or especially like the musical part of that, you know, the suspense.
There's evoking your feelings and what's in your head, but there's also invoking the listener's feelings, right? You want them to have react. You know, there are bands that just, okay, we play and people bounce, but I think you want a little more out of your audience.
You know, obviously, we do the songs for ourselves, but if we can have people, you know, either intimidated or be happy or whatever, then it's great. You know, it's all about emotions in our music, I think. Just make sure that we, you know, that we provoke some kind of, that we stir up something in people, at least, you know, so they don't just feel that it's kind of bland and not interesting, I guess.
But it's interesting that, again, when you see a David Lynch movie, he's not going out of his way to purposely be dark or strange, but he's affected so many people by just having a way of kind of filtering through some of the things he's doing. And I think that, again, when you, it's not just this, you know, because it, again, everybody keeps going for the, you know, well, how come they're so dark? But it's not that, that's not what's going on here, right?
No, I think there's it works on many levels, and dark, I think dark is in a way a very one-dimensional description of our music, because it is also very poetic, very very romantic always, and this record is dark, but it's not hopeless. I think it's a very I mean, there might be a lot of sort of death. But that's also a point of a new beginning, if you know what I mean. I mean, so I think there's a lot of like, to me, the record is a lot about something new, like a new beginning. I feel like, or getting you know, through something and arising, you know. I think it's a very encouraging record.
I read a review today, and I this is either going to annoy you or you're going to love it. I think you should love it. Paste Magazine said, a frustratingly hit or miss band.
Yeah, I mean, I know, and I think I understand why that person is saying that. It's because we're never trying. We're not. I mean, you can't really pigeonhole the Ravenettes, because we know we're sort of unpredictable, even though you can you know, we do carry our influences on our sleeves and that kind of stuff. But I feel like, you know, our records are very, very different from one another. That's just how we sort of like to work. And I think people just get confused. And that's why, I mean, a person like that would say hit frustratingly hit or miss. It's, you know, obviously someone that has a very specific taste, and then one record sort of like hits that taste.
From that point of view, that the band's job is to satisfy a need for accuracy or for lack of surprise or something like that. And yet there are things in your, forgetting your influences on your sleeve, because like I said, we'll solve that later. I've got a great way to solve that at the end of the interview, to solve that forever. Any band that's worth their weight in anything wouldn't make the same record, right?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think it's all about, you know, we try to evolve, and we have a lot of different influences, and we try to make things interesting for ourselves too, you know, and I think that's the most important thing. Like, I guess we're not the kind of people who just want to make the same record twice. We just want to do something that's quite different and appealing to us at a certain stage in our lives, you know. And you know, I mean, if we were to do a record right now, we would probably be a lot different than this record right now. So yeah, I think it's about just where you're at in your life and how you perceive things and what you're sort of emotionally capable of, I guess.
I read a quote, I don't remember which one of you said it, but it was very interesting, because you said that your records are, quote, tricky for commercial radio.
I mean, it's pretty simple. I mean, it's a couple of things. One is obviously the way that we choose to produce our music. You just don't want to have too much noise or distortion or fuss. I mean, it's as simple as that. And then I think there's... I think there's also sometimes, obviously, lyrically or thematically, there could be a problem with boys who rape should all be destroyed. Or.
But that's the thing. I think from the very beginning, they had a very tough time figuring out what kind of radio stations we would have to go to, because the rock station thought that we weren't loud enough, as you say. And the indie stations thought that we were sometimes too poppy or too not indie enough or whatever. So it's always been a struggle through those two things. I mean, not for us, because we don't care, but I think more for people who were trying to promote us. It was just like they were trying to find a specific place to, you know, how to categorize the Ravenheads as a band. And because we always just said that we were a rock and roll band, and I still think we are.
You even take covers, a lot of covers, and you make them your own, My Boyfriend's Back, or, you know, so you would think that that would get people to pay attention in an interesting sort of way too, right?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, recently we did a cover of I Want to Be Adored, and I feel like we've gotten a lot of attention from that, because there's both going to be the people that knew the original version and then the people that discover the original version through us. And so I think that's always like an interesting musical experiment, you know, to try and do other people's songs. Yeah, and it's just fun. I don't know, it's fun. We haven't done a cover in a while though. We need to do a cover soon. We haven't played a cover live in a while either. We used to do, you know, we've done everything from Eddie Cochran, we did Every Day, Buddy Holly.
So do you have anything in mind? Have you heard anything recently or something old that you're kind of saying to yourself, yeah, you know, we have to do our thing with this? You use this word and I kind of want to go back to this. What people probably don't understand is when you are being dark and you're making a song like War in Heaven, you're having fun, right? I mean, this is fun to do, is it not?
Yes, it is. It is.
So why don't people get that, you think?
I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of people have preconceived notions of what you are. And also because that what we talked about earlier, that our band is not, we don't put out the same albums all the time. So we have so many different, you know, fans. And because, you know, some people like the first one better than some people like this one better. Some people like that. And it's pretty hard for us to sort of satisfy everyone, because someone wants to hear certain songs from a particular album and we might be a little tired of playing that. We want to do something else. And I don't know, man. It's like, we want to have a good time on stage. So we play whatever we feel like doing. You know, if we were to cater to what we thought that everyone wanted, then our set list would be completely different, and then possibly we might not be very happy up on stage, you know?
Isn't it really nifty that now there's that whole it's not a generation per se, but most certainly you have, you took your influences, you put them through the blender, you said, okay, this is what we like, this is who we're going to be. You created your sound, but now people are creating their new sound with your sound.
Yeah, that's exciting. I mean, it's all, I mean, another exciting thing for me is like when we have like fans, young people, for instance, that come up and say, hey, I discovered music through, you know, getting into you guys, then I learned about your influences, and that's what, you know, we did when we listened to, you know, our heroes and read about or heard about their influences, and you go further back in the history of music, and I, you know, that's, it's a beautiful thing.
I mean, we never thought about, like I said, all we just cared about, and that was from the very beginning of the band, we just wanted to make music that we truly loved, and it was fun to play, and it was easy to play, and we can go out and have a good time with it, you know? And hopefully, like I said, you know, please people, whatever. So that was really always the plan.
But I will say, though, I mean, it's also, you know, the term selling out is, I don't know. I mean, it depends on, is that person, you know, are you going through a period in your professional career where you want to try and experiment and investigate like stuff like that, like big screens, and that can be, you know, that can be another creative outlet. I think it just is like you just go through different periods of your sort of, you know, life as a creative person or whatever you do in a. And you know, you sometimes you make mistakes. That's okay too. You know, I think it's okay to, like, you know, just experiment with stuff, everything, visually, sonically, and then sometimes you hit, sometimes you miss.
There's no selling out. It doesn't really matter whether you're indie. It doesn't really matter whether you went from a big label, which you did, you know, to a smaller label, right? In the end, the fans, if the fans get it and the music is right, then nobody really should care.
I agree. I mean, it bothers me when I read fans say, you know, they get upset with a band because of the label that they're on. And I'm like, it doesn't matter what label any music.
Nirvana was on Geffen.
It's like, I think you're right in when you say that, you know, people should just listen to the music.
I don't think I've ever looked at an album to see what label bands were on. I mean, I'm sure you could name me a ton of bands and ask me what label they're on. I have no idea. I don't even know what label the Rolling Stones are on or were on. I have no idea. We were always interested in making really good beats and having really interesting drum sounds and stuff like that, and working with computers and programming and everything like that. It was just that's always what we have been into, you know, and then we just mix it in with our old influences, you know. It's sort of like, you know, if Buddy Holly did sort of like a trip hop song or something, you know.
So what I've invented, and we've done hundreds of these, is a thing called a musical sandwich, and it's two of your songs is the bread, and then songs by anybody else. You can pick five or six or seven or eight songs each, and I play it uninterrupted for the rest of the hour.